It's business time, baby.
You are listening to Solo Monster Sounds Off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster.
Conquered. I'm home.
You're like fighting a woman?
You're saying Vince McMahon is stupid. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, my God. We're only an hour in. We have two more hours of this.
God, this dialogue is shit.
Who writes this stuff? Bruce?
Come over here and fight me.
I'm the Solo Monster, damn it.
Solo Monster. Who are you to doubt El Dandy?
Woo!
Is Bad Bunny's favorite holiday on the calendar. Happy Easter Sunday. I hear he loves his Cadbury cream eggs. This is episode 698 of the Solo Monster Sounds Off for April 4th, 2021. I am the Solo Monster. We had John Cena hosting Wipeout the other night. It was the big premiere. I love Wipeout. I'm glad it's back. And so are the 1.1 million other people who tuned in on TBS to watch it. This is the final day for the standalone WWE network in this country. The network officially shuts down at midnight. It will be missed as we wait for Peacock to finish combing through the 17,000 hours of content they have to go through to scrub out all the bad stuff. The DX skit impersonating the Nation of Domination from Raw back in 98 is the latest casualty, although come on. You had to know that was coming. And if you think that because you live in another country and you don't have Peacock that it's not going to affect you, think again. Because WWE is said to be mirroring all of Peacock's content edits on the network in other countries as well. Maybe there'll be some differences there, but apparently they're going to follow Peacock's lead and take out anything that they may deem offensive. But until they get everything up on Peacock, I'm going to keep reminding you now would be a good time to take advantage of our ExpressVPN offer. You should be using a VPN anyway for a safe and secure connection. But when you use our link, you get 3 additional months free on top of a 1-year subscription. ExpressVPN.com/Solomonster is the place to go. So this is going to be the busiest week of the year. For yours truly, I am planning 5 live streams on 5 consecutive nights, starting Wednesday with AEW Dynamite. Thursday night, I'm going to be live on YouTube after NXT TakeOver Night 2 with a review for both nights. Then Friday, I think the plan is after SmackDown goes off the air, I'll be live with thoughts on that show, which they're now billing as a WrestleMania edition of SmackDown. I'll talk more about that later on here. In the podcast this week. But we'll talk about that, and we'll also do WrestleMania predictions. So that'll be Friday night. And then next weekend, it's back-to-back live streams on Saturday and Sunday for nights 1 and 2 of WrestleMania. And, Sound Off episode 699 next Sunday. So if you think that there isn't enough Sound Off content already, it's going to be a Solo Monster overload this week. So now would be a great time to go ahead and subscribe to the channel on YouTube, or you can join and become a member. You get some perks for your patronage on YouTube, including retro audio, the lost episodes of the podcast for Sound Off Legend tier members. I got to shout out Brian Becerra and Giovanni Zarate, who upgraded their membership this week from the Sound Off Superstar tier to the Legend tier. That means a lot. So I thank you for that. If you want to make a PayPal donation, you may do so on thesolomonster.com. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out. Thank you to Night Stalker, Naif Al-Safar, John Loose Cannon Lopez, West Coast James Herrera, Big Bear Brian Becerra, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Killshot Keith Hart, Nitrous Oxide Nathan Cania, Le Champion, Lamont Ambler, Evil Dose, Jeff Lippman, The Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard, Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, Gabriel, The San Diego Beer Snob, Solus. Hey, Gabe, man, I replied to your email. I'm getting those bounce backs again. I think you need a new email address. But he had asked me, buy or sell. I may as well answer it here. He had asked me buy or sell on Bret Hart against AJ Styles. Or Kurt Angle against Daniel Bryan. Obviously, all in their primes. And I got to tell you, in that scenario, I have to go with Angle Bryant, even though I think both of them would be fantastic matches. Angle, at his peak, I mean, was just an absolute machine. Really, the ideal match would be Bret Hart against Kurt Angle. You could take those two and put them together. That's the match I always wanted to see. Bret Hart said that he used to wake up in a cold sweat. He would have wrestling dreams of being in the ring with Kurt Angle, having him in a headlock, and then he would suddenly wake up. This was after he had the stroke. So, believe me, it's a match I'm sure both those guys would have loved to have had. We were robbed of it, unfortunately. What a match that would have been. What a match that would have been. Bret Hart and Kurt Angle, say, 2002, 2003, if Bret never got hurt. Ugh, what a match that would have been. But I gotta go with Angle Bryan in this scenario. And Black Phoenix, the Black Phoenix himself, Brandon Yelverton, hashtag restore the hurt business. Brandon and the EK team are commemorating one of the best groups in recent wrestling history, the standout faction that carried Raw throughout the pandemic era. Enlightened Comedy presents Hurt, a WWE Hurt Business parody of Cardi B's hit song Up, documenting Bobby Lashley's rise to the WWE Championship and hyping his upcoming WrestleMania match with Drew McIntyre. Hurt premieres tonight, Sunday, at 6 o'clock p.m. on YouTube. Just search Enlightened Comedy on YouTube. That's comedy with a K. Enlightened Comedy, 6 p.m. tonight. Check out their Hurt parody. And that's from Brandon Yelverton. We're going to have more shout-outs here in just a little bit, but I gotta plug this, because as big of a week as it is for the podcast, there is another big week for Wrestle Rumble. You guys are into replica belts or even just winning some cash. This is a huge week on WrestleRumble.com, which is good news if you're looking to win any of those things, because we have three different contests to tell you about. First of all, it's the NXT Belt Bash for only $1. You can enter right now through Thursday at 7 Eastern for the chance to win the NXT Championship, North American title, both NXT tag team belts, or a possible mystery belt. And I will tell you, the last time they gave away mystery belts recently, someone walked away with the classic WWF tag team titles. So you never know what you may end up with. Go to WrestleRumble.com to enter. I'm going to be picking the 5 winners at random on my takeover stand and deliver stream Thursday night live on YouTube. There's also a WrestleMania pick'em. First place is $1,000 cash. Second and third place winners will each receive $100. You answer a series of prop questions about the matches on the card, things that might happen, who's going to hit a spear first in the main event, that sort of thing. Cutoff for entries is 7 Eastern on Saturday, April 10th. And finally, there is the Legends of WrestleMania belt giveaway. Cutoff time is the same, Saturday, April 10th, 7 Eastern. That is night one of WrestleMania. First place winner receives a custom Legends of WrestleMania belt. Second place gets the Smoking Skull belt. Third place gets The Rock's Brahma Bull belt that he never actually wore on TV, but there was in fact a Brahma Bull belt made. You can own it. Wrestle Rumble picks some of his own personal favorite WrestleMania moments to feature on that Legends belt. I have seen the belt, the pictures of it now. You can find it online. It looks incredible. Some of his favorite moments mirror my own. I'm actually jealous, to be honest with you, of whoever wins that thing, because it is a beautiful looking belt, custom made. And I don't think this is going to be the last time that you see a custom belt like this either. There may be more to come. But trust me, the $1 is worth it to enter for a chance to win this thing alone. There is a fourth contest as well. That's a custom Stone Cold belt giveaway that you can enter. I'll talk about that a little bit more next week. We'll save that drawing for my WrestleMania Night 2 stream next Sunday. But visit WrestleRumble.com. He's going to have all the details there. You can enter. You can read up on all this stuff. And as always, I thank him for giving me the chance to host the actual giveaways and be a small piece. It's It's always fun to hear back from people who send tweets and videos of them when they get their belts, opening the box, the unboxing of the belts and everything. Love seeing it. We begin with some major New Japan news. And this does include a spoiler, actually more than one spoiler, from this morning's Sakura Genesis show. So skip ahead by several minutes if you have not yet watched the show. If you do not want to be spoiled by what happens, you have been warned. But first, before I even get into that, let me talk about the new belt. I'm sure many of you have seen pictures of this thing by now. New Japan unveiled its new IWGP World Heavyweight Title belt at its Road to Genesis event this week at Korakuen Hall. The lineage of the IWGP and the IWGP Intercontinental titles is officially retired. The lineage has ended. They are now unified into one singular world heavyweight title, which incorporates elements in its design of all four previous belt designs into the main plate. The side plates are apparently modeled after the Intercontinental title. Now, upon first viewing, as I said on Twitter, it was not good. And I think my biggest issue, more than anything else, I think my biggest issue is the IWGP belt looks so much bigger than this one. It just looked more prestigious. It was a bigger belt than what they currently have. And it was always going to be hard to top what was the most beautiful belt design in all of wrestling. But I will say the lighting did that belt no favors from the photos that were popping up on social media showing Ibushi holding it in the ring, you know, when they unveiled it. The lighting did not do that belt any favors at all. I saw some close-up photos of the belt that were taken later on by the belt maker, and it looks a lot better than it did in those other photos. It's got red and blue studs in it, which really you would never know by looking at those other images. The belt is apparently, it's pretty heavy. It weighs in at about 13 pounds, and I'm just thinking to myself, my God, if this belt here, which looks tiny by comparison, is 13 pounds, how heavy was that old one? Maybe they were complaining about how heavy the belt was. I don't know. But it's still not as good as the old belt. This is a classic case of don't fix what isn't broken. I just don't see the need to, even if you end the lineage of one, you start fresh. You effectively just kind of unified the two, you merged them together. There was no reason to change away from that design. The new belt does remind me of the Divas title, which is an image now that I cannot get out of my head. I saw that comparison made, and unfortunately, those people are 100% correct. The butterfly belt, I thought we were done with that. Kota Ibushi. Let's talk about Kota Ibushi. Kota Ibushi wins both belts at Wrestle Kingdom, right? Becomes the double champion. Then he unifies them at their 49th anniversary show about a month ago. This past week, unveils the new belt design, and now promptly loses the championship. That is the big news. Kota Ibushi is no longer the IWGP World Heavyweight Champion. His reign with the new title ends at 31 days. So from the moment the World Heavyweight title was officially announced and conceived, it has only been 1 month. Lost the title earlier this morning to Will Ospreay at the Sakura Genesis show, which is sure to send a lot of fans into a fit on social media. Ospreay kicked out of two Kamigoyes, hit a V-trigger and a hidden blade, and pinned Ibushi with the Stormbreaker to become the new IWGP Divas Champion. I just got done watching the match, in fact. I wanted to make sure I watched it before I came on the air here and started recording. It was a very good match. I've seen both men this year alone have much better matches, but this was still, I thought, a very good match. When it was over, Jeff Cobb, who is aligned with Ospreay, part of the Empire, laid Ibushi out with the Tour of the Islands. Ospreay then got on the mic. He said he was looking to avenge his loss to Okada at Wrestle Kingdom. He called out Okada. Okada came to the ring, grabbed the mic, but Shingo Takagi comes out, snatches the microphone right out of his hand, and says that he should be getting a title shot before Okada because he beat Okada during the New Japan Cup. And Ospreay says that he would defend his championship against Shingo first, and then Okada. Remember, Okada is working with two slip discs in his back. I really wish this guy would take some time off. I guess that's not really the New Japan way of doing things. So it doesn't look like that's going to happen. Ospreay is now the top gaijin heel in the company. And look, I don't think anybody can doubt the talent that Will Ospreay has and the kind of matches that he has. But I hate that they took the title off Ibushi so quickly. Ospreay and Shingo for the Divas title should be fantastic. But I really, I'm bummed that they took that title off Ibushi so fast. But hey, you know what? I was just thinking about this. Maybe, potentially, this frees up Ibushi to come to the States and make some appearances and do some matches in AEW. I mean, is it really that far-fetched to think that that could be a possibility? Maybe. Roppongi 3K, Sho and Yo, they also regained the junior tag team titles from El Desperado and Kanemaru. Yo had been out with a torn ACL since June, so this was his big return. And that is your New Japan update. Had to kick things off with some big news that is just breaking here this morning with the main event result. In quite the shocking development, we go from one kind of shocking development to another. We learned this week the name of Steve Austin's next guest on the Broken Skull Sessions on the network, or Peacock as it were, airing the same day as Night 2 of WrestleMania. So it's going to be dropping next Sunday, April 11th. And that man is none other than AEW's own Chris Jericho. That is not the name I would have predicted. And it broke the internet for a few hours on Friday. Both men spoke with Justin Barrasso of Sports Illustrated about how this all came about. Austin said, "I was having a beer one night after my interview with The Undertaker aired, and out of the blue, Chris Jericho reached out and said, 'Man, that was a great interview.' I sent him back a couple of those emojis, one of a beer mug and the other of an eagle, and then he called me right then and there." I like the idea that Austin is he only responds to people with emojis. I like that. He says, "We got to talking. I've always respected the hell out of his career, and I'm glad they're around. It gives the guys and girls in professional wrestling more places to work. I said, 'I'd love to have you on the show.' And he said he'd love to do it. So I texted Vince and said that we had this badass idea about Jericho coming on the show. Vince goes, 'It's cool. Go ahead.' But me and Vince don't always do well with phones and texts and all that, so I texted one more time, 'Are you sure it is okay to have Chris Jericho on the show?' And Vince gave me the thumbs up, and Chris came out to do the show." So the article mentions that Tony Khan also gave Jericho his blessing to do it. Austin says nothing is off limits. I mean, they didn't explicitly say in the article they're going to talk about AEW, but that is what is implied here. When he says that nothing is off limits, they go into everything, he says. It's very cool that this is happening, and the timing is smart, you know, timing it next Sunday, because it puts eyeballs on Peacock right in the middle of WrestleMania weekend. It's the morning after Night 1, same day as Night 2. So it's a brilliant get. It's a brilliant move on their part. And, you know, AEW gets some attention out of it too. And we'll see how much they go into AEW on the show. I'm sure the majority of it is obviously going to be spent on talking about Jericho's WWE career. The guy spent 20 years in the company. But you have to imagine that they're going to bring up what Jericho is up to these days. So I look at it as a win-win for everybody involved. I already got a couple of emails. Does this open the door to more between the two companies? Is the forbidden door open now? It's an interview. It's not peace negotiations. It's not a match. So no, that is not going to happen. We are not going to suddenly get WWE and AEW working together. Look, it's not as if WWE hasn't worked out things like this before with other promotions when they've wanted stuff. They wanted Ric Flair for the Hall of Fame when he was still with TNA. So they worked out a deal, and in exchange, they sent Christian back to TNA for one night to make an appearance. So, I mean, it's not unheard of. It was just very unexpected to hear the news. But let's start taking bets now on how long it takes for Jericho during the interview to bring up the fact that he pinned The Rock and Stone Cold on the same night to become the Undisputed Champion. How deep into the interview is it going to be before we get that first mention? Interestingly, Jericho's contract with AEW is up next year. I don't know if it's at the beginning of the year. I think it might be later in the year next year. But when he signed with them, it was said to be a 3-year deal, which would put the expiration sometime in 2022. And that's going to be very interesting. You know, he's talked about the fact that he still, you know, texts Vince McMahon or keeps in touch with him every, you know, now and then, here and there. But he has said before that he has no intention of ever leaving AEW and going back to WWE. That is what he once said. Now, Jericho may have done and said a lot of really stupid things, but when it comes to business, he's not a dumb man. He'll play both sides against each other if he thinks he can get a better deal out of it, not a doubt in my mind, because that's the smart thing to do. But when push comes to shove, you know, do I, you know, see him going back to WWE next year? Do I see him leaving AEW? No! No, of course not. Now, we don't know what AEW's business is going to look like in a year. They've got, you know, that TV deal with TNT locked in for a few more years. I cannot imagine a scenario where AEW isn't around in a year or a year and a half. So, if things are still kind of status quo, I don't want to say there's not a chance, but do I envision a scenario where Chris Jericho leaves and goes to WWE? No. No. Why would he? Why would he? Tony Khan pretty much lets him do whatever he wants. I don't think Tony Khan ever says no. He makes, you know, Jericho's making great money. He's got creative freedom. Freedom on his promos. He has a clause in his contract that allows him to keep working with New Japan whenever he wants. He can make his own deals with New Japan. Why would he leave? He's got one of the most sweetheart deals in all of wrestling. Plus, he's got his band. He can go tour whenever he wants to. He's got his cruise every year. They were going to have live Dynamite matches on the Jericho cruise this year. I don't know if they're still doing that in October because they rescheduled the cruise. But, you know, with his whole cruise endeavor, he can have Tony Khan, AEW, they could work together on that. Yeah, he tried to get Triple H, I think, and WWE to work with him on that first cruise, and they basically blew him off. So he ended up having wrestlers from almost every other promotion, but WWE, NXT, they wouldn't send anybody on that first cruise. So there is no reason I can see right now that Jericho would go back to WWE and leave AEW because he's got a sweetheart deal. But if he's smart, as we get into later this year, into the beginning of next year, you may start seeing reports and rumors of Jericho. Ooh, Jericho's considering leaving. Jericho's weighing his options, or there's little murmurs about what he might do. And to me, that's all just contract ploys and just trying to get the best deal he possibly can. But at the end of the day, he's not going anywhere. He's got no reason to. The Matt Men podcast broke the news weeks ago, and WWE made it official this week. NXT is moving to Tuesdays on USA Network at 8 p.m. starting April 13th. That is the week after WrestleMania, so not this week, but next week. They've also signed a new multi-year deal for the show with USA Network. They had a 2-year deal that was set to expire this fall, so they renewed it, or extended it. The show will also be moving up a day on Sportsnet in Canada and on BT Sport in the UK. Triple H met with the NXT roster before this week's show and said the move is a good thing because they will have Monday Night Raw as something of a lead-in the night before. And now they'll have the night all to themselves on Tuesdays. They're moving not because of AEW. They're moving because USA Network is very likely going to be airing NHL games on Wednesdays later this year. The deal between NBC and the NHL is not done. The NHL could very well sign with another network, but NXT would see a lot of its shows preempted and bumped, so they made the move. They really didn't have much of a choice. He's right about one thing, though. It is the best possible move. I had suggested Thursdays, if you remember. I think when I did my beginning of the year predictions for 2021, I think I had predicted NXT's going to move nights. They'll probably move to Thursdays. So instead of Thursdays, they move to Tuesdays, which is fine. Impact has already announced they're moving from Tuesdays to Thursdays to avoid the collateral damage. But without the head-to-head, both shows should see an increase in viewership. But the reason NXT moved to USA and expanded to 2 hours... So let's go back to the beginning of all this. Remember, NXT used to be an hour-long show on the network, and it was fine and it was perfectly tolerable that way. But as they continue to sign people and more people and pack them into the PC, there were and this is still a problem even now with the 2 hours. There's so many people who don't get any television time because there's not enough time to feature them all. They've stockpiled so much talent. And now when the pandemic hit, they can't even work those little spot shows down in Florida because they're not running live events. So all these people have is the performance center and they work out and they train. How much of that can you do, though, without actually working real matches, right? And being featured on television. So even today, it's still a very big problem. But at the beginning of all of this, the real reason that they moved to USA and expanded to 2 hours was to try to stifle AEW's growth. And they failed. AEW ended up signing a 3-year extension with TNT. They have an option for a 4th year all the way through 2024. Works out to about $45 million a year, maybe a little less. AEW lucked into that deal when they did because if TNT had waited 2 months, 3 months, the pandemic would have hit and who knows what might have happened. Tony Khan in the past has made it very clear without that TNT money, AEW would likely not exist. Right now, AEW may well not even exist. They may not have survived the pandemic. Were it not for the money that they are getting off that new contract from TNT that they signed just before everything got shut down and the world went to hell. So timing-wise, they could not have been luckier. Or, if nothing else, they would not have been able to retain pretty much all of its roster throughout this whole pandemic era. I mean, aside from some of the ladies who I know were stuck overseas due to the travel restrictions. So you saw people like Bea Priestley and some of these other women who were working dates for AEW and all of a sudden weren't there anymore. Kylie Rae, that was different because she asked for her release. Aside from those wrestlers, I think the only person AEW has ever really gotten rid of is Jimmy Havoc. They've never really fired people. They haven't really gone on some kind of mass, cutting people or anything like that. You hear about Black Friday and WWE and stuff. AEW has been able to avoid that. Outside of Jimmy Havoc, they really have not had to do that. And it's a good thing that WWE failed to stifle AEW's growth because having another healthy promotion is a great thing for the wrestling business. Even if you do not personally like AEW, if you do not support the product that they put out on TV, you don't like their style of wrestling, you don't like anything about them, that's cool. But it's still a good thing. Ask any of the talent in WWE and I guarantee you they would tell you the same thing. They're happy that there is an AEW. They may never go there. But at some point in the future, they might use them for leverage. And even if they don't use them for leverage, they may have friends who work there. They may be a fan of the product. They may tune in every Wednesday night. They may watch that over NXT. Guarantee you. Ask anybody in that WWE locker room and they would say the exact same thing. Now, all of that being said, now the real test begins. All of this talk about a Wednesday night war, there was never really much of a war when you have two shows that can't even get to 1 million live viewers each week. AEW came close. They may have had one or two times where they actually did that over the past year and a half. I don't know that NXT has ever done that. Maybe once, and I'm not remembering. Maybe before AEW debuted, but you've got two shows that struggle every single week to even come close. to that million mark. I feel like that's sort of the line that you set, right? You want to try to get to a million viewers every week. And largely these shows, in terms of live overnight viewership, let's put the DVR on the side for a second, they're not able to do that. Now, AEW does over a million viewers every single week when you factor in the DVR numbers. I don't believe that NXT does, but that doesn't take into account for whatever numbers they do on the network because we don't have access to those numbers. But I guarantee you, if the numbers on the network were that high, and I know NXT was consistently the highest viewed programming, at least at one time, on the network, that may not be the case right now. But even then, I guarantee you, if the numbers were that high on the WWE network, that company, they would have put a press release out and gloated about it. And they never did. I don't know that Peacock would share those numbers either. So it was really more of a skirmish than a war. But it was a skirmish that AEW largely dominated. They had their up and down weeks. Most weeks, though, they trounce NXT. It's to the point of embarrassment. NXT could not even crack 600,000 viewers a few weeks ago. That is embarrassing. There's no positive, good way to spin that. It is embarrassing. So AEW won that battle. But now they no longer have the excuse of running opposite NXT, and NXT no longer has the excuse of running opposite AEW. And both shows did horribly this week. Even though I thought Dynamite was a great show this week, they did only 700,000 viewers, which is way down from what they've been doing of late. That is a terrible drop for them. There is no positive way for AEW to spin that number on Wednesday. AEW shit the bed this week in the overnight numbers. Now, NXT rose a little bit, but even NXT, they only did 654,000 viewers. And I see a lot of AEW fans celebrating the NXT move as some sort of victory. And, you know, it's like some sort of retreat, which it is in a way, for NXT. And I would tell these AEW fans not to celebrate too loudly. Because in a few weeks, if they're still flirting with a million viewers, but they can't quite crack that number, that ain't nothing to celebrate. That's still a good number. It's much higher than, TNT used to do in that same time slot before AEW even existed. So I'm sure TNT is very happy to have Dynamite on. And as long as the network is happy at the end of the day, that's really all that matters. If they can keep the overlords there at TNT happy with a smile on their face, that's the most important thing. And by all accounts, TNT is all in on AEW. Now Cody and Brandy are getting their own reality show. They're probably, there's a second show in the works. So things are good with the network. And that's what you want. You want to keep the network happy. But There's no reason now for them not to be hitting the million mark on most weeks. And I honestly don't believe that's going to happen. I think a lot of fans who are assuming that now because NXT is moving, that the viewers are just going to watch AEW automatically. I think these people are in for a rude awakening. I just do not see AEW doing 950,000 or a million people every single week live. And if they don't, if they largely stay at the level that they have been at without any growth, then that is not good. For a company with the talent they have, the elite guys, and they have the young guys like Darby Allin and MJF and Sammy Guevara and Rey Fénix and Jungle Boy, and then some of the big names that they brought in that fans would know, like Sting or Christian Cage, if you're a WWE fan or a lapsed fan from the Attitude Era or something, you at least have heard the name Christian, you know who he is. So they have a mix. They have a mix of young guys, independent guys, and former WWE guys that bring a name with them. Paul White, right? He's doing commentary right now, but he's got a wrestling contract as well. He's going to be wrestling at some point. So they're going to have the Big Show on TV. Whatever you think of the Big Show, he's a name. So they have a mix of all of these guys. If they can't boost their numbers, there's just no good way to spin that. It's time now for AEW to sink or swim on the merits of their own show. And the same goes for NXT. NXT fans can whine about how Wednesdays was their night and they came to our night. They invaded our house. Well, now you've moved out of that house. You've moved into a new house in a new neighborhood. You have new neighbors, and none of them are in direct competition with you. This is a bigger test for NXT, because they shouldn't be doing 597,000 viewers or 654,000 viewers every week without AEW now running head-to-head. It'll be mighty embarrassing if they can't get those numbers up. But they have their new contract, so it's not like, you know, it's not like if they don't, that they're toast. It's just a really bad look. It's all about appearance. But there is one other thing. TNT is still committed to a second AEW show later this year on TNT. And wouldn't it be something if they shifted Dark, if AEW shifted Dark to a different night on YouTube and TNT aired that second AEW show on Tuesdays opposite NXT? Wouldn't that be a kick in the crotch? I hope that doesn't happen. I hope that doesn't happen, but man, what a kick in the balls that would be. Chris Jericho on his podcast did a show with Christian this past week, and he revealed something very interesting that speaks to how involved the TNT executives are with things. He said the reason Paul White's debut was not a surprise, where he just showed up on Dynamite, which would have been really cool, would have been a big moment. The reason it happened that way is due to feedback that AEW received from TNT after the Sting debut a few months earlier. When Sting debuted as a surprise back in December on that Winter is Coming episode of Dynamite, TNT apparently asked them not to do that anymore, and instead, in the future, announce these people in advance to take advantage of the ratings. Which, again, for the people who love to throw in my face that ratings don't matter anymore, you look foolish when you say such things. Yet another example of why you look and sound like a fool. But that's why they put out that press release and they had a whole bunch of tweets announcing the Big Show signing instead of just having him show up on Dynamite or, you know, showing up randomly and bumping into Shaquille O'Neal in the back. You know, or however they wanted to do. I mean, there were a million different ways they could have put Big Show on TV as a surprise, and it would have been a big moment. Because he is the last person, right? I mean, he's in that realm, I think, of people like Undertaker, like a WWE lifer that you would never expect to pop up in another promotion at this stage of the game. So, if he would have just shown up randomly, even at the very end of the show, copyright comes on, they fade to black, it would have people buzzing even more than they were. It would have got a lot of people talking, and I guarantee you a lot of people tuned in. It would have gotten a lot of people tuned in right from the beginning the following week on TV. But that is why they did it that way. TNT wants them to shy away from the surprise debuts because they think it'll help pop a big rating if they let people know someone big is going to be on the show. I argue the exact opposite. I would argue that you want to have at least some surprises on the show because it promotes the idea that anything can happen. It goes back to the Nitro formula back during the Monday Night War. You would think TNT would know this since Nitro aired on TNT. How many times did we see a big name or some name from WWE jump ship over to WCW and randomly show up on Nitro, and it created a buzz, it created a stir, because people weren't expecting it. Or maybe they were. Maybe there were rumors or dirt sheet reports about this guy's going to be coming in, but then they would just show up. WCW was not airing vignettes promoting someone was coming soon. That wasn't their style. Right from the moment Lex Luger showed up on Nitro, that very first episode of Nitro, we had a lot of that during that era. And it created this aura that anything can happen. You never know who might show up on Nitro. You never know who might show up on Dynamite. And then hopefully from that, especially if it's a cliffhanger at the end of the show, you would get people to tune in next week for the follow-up. What's he doing here? Plus, you know, the way they hyped up the free agent signing at Revolution, that did Christian no favors at all. If he had just walked out on that pay-per-view unannounced, it's exactly like I said, it would have been received so much better than it was, and it wasn't Christian's fault. But it ended up just people took that and they ran with it. And again, it just did them no favors. So I completely disagree. I certainly don't think you need to overdo the surprises. You may have someone every now and then who you want to announce and put a press release out. I'm not saying everybody should be a surprise, but this idea that they really just don't want AEW to do surprises anymore and everybody should be announced in advance because that somehow will do a better job of driving ratings, I disagree. And TNT should know better because there's a history of them doing it the surprise way many years ago, and it seemed to work out pretty well for them ratings-wise back then. Although these shows aren't doing quite the numbers that those shows were doing, you know, 25 years ago. But I think you absolutely want to have some surprises on these shows, and I think TNT is dead wrong on that. Now, NXT is airing a live two-night takeover this week, Stand and Deliver, on Wednesday and Thursday. I'm not going to stand and deliver. I'm going to sit right here and deliver for all of you. This Wednesday show, by the way, is going to be simulcast on USA and on Peacock. The Thursday show is Peacock only. The Peacock version of Night One is going to have no commercials. So when USA Network cuts to an ad break, the action is going to continue live on Peacock. On the TakeOver conference call on Friday, Triple H said they were still trying to figure out how this is all going to work, and it's very likely that they're still going to be trying to figure it out up to the minute before they go live on the air that night. On paper, it is an excellent card, and I will be live on YouTube. I will be sitting and delivering for all of you Thursday night. I'm not going to go live both nights because we're doing AEW on Wednesday, but on Thursday night, I'm going to recap both nights of TakeOver live on YouTube. I hope you'll join me there. Let me run through this card here and give you my predictions since we're only a few days away. Night one on Wednesday has Pete Dunne one-on-one against Kushida. Should be a fine wrestling match. I got to go with Pete Dunne on this one. We have MSK, the Grizzled Young Veterans, and Legado del Fantasma in a triple threat to crown new NXT Tag Team Champions. Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch forced to relinquish the titles. Danny Burch has a separated shoulder, so the titles are vacant. We will have new champions guaranteed on Wednesday night, and I believe that it will be the Grizzled Young Veterans who walk away with the belts. Tommaso Ciampa against Walter for the NXT United Kingdom Championship. This is one of the matches I am most looking forward to this week. Even if you lump WrestleMania in there, this is still probably in my top three of matches I'm looking forward to this week. But, you know, Walter's been UK champion now for over 700 days. I cannot envision him dropping it now to Ciampa, of all people. I just don't see it. So I think it's going to be a kick-ass match. I think there's going to be a lot of bruised chests when this match is over, but I think Walter walks away still the United Kingdom champion. We've got a gauntlet eliminator. And by the way, let me go back to that for a second. So we have not seen Timothy Thatcher on TV in a few weeks. Thatcher was feuding for months, it felt like, a few months with Ciampa, and they had the fight pit. They gained respect for each other, and then they became tag team partners. And I would have given them a run with the tag team titles. Had they done that, they wouldn't have had this problem, by the way, with Danny Burch being injured and having to vacate the belts. But there is a history between Timothy Thatcher and Imperium that goes even, you know, outside of WWE. And they were even teasing that. Like, Imperium wanted to kind of bring Thatcher back in with them. But we haven't seen Thatcher on TV in a few weeks, and I don't know if it has to do with COVID. I don't know if they're keeping him out on purpose, if he's hurt. I have no idea. I'm thinking that we're going to see Timothy Thatcher on this show on Wednesday, and I'm thinking that Thatcher may end up linking back up with Imperium and going full-on heel again and turning on Ciampa, and that may be what cost Ciampa the match. So I'm not really convinced it's going to be a straight-up clean win for Walter. I think Thatcher is going to factor into this and probably end up as part of Imperium. We have a gauntlet eliminator with the winner facing Johnny Gargano on night two for the North American Championship. Isaiah Swerve Scott and Leon Ruff are going to start the eliminator, followed by Bronson Reed, Cameron Grimes, Dexter Lumis, and LA Knight, who won a battle royal on Wednesday to earn the right to enter the gauntlet last. I think it goes to one of the babyfaces, So you have Babyface against the heel Gargano the next night. I don't think it's going to be Leon Ruff. So that narrows it down to Dexter Lumis or Bronson Reed. I would prefer Reed. I like Bronson Reed. I think he's got a big upside. Triple H was really talking him up on that conference call this week. So clearly they have what I hope are bigger plans for him. I don't know if they'll belt well. You know what? I think they will. I'm going to go with Bronson Reed winning the Eliminator and getting the title match on Thursday. I was kind of waffling on what would happen then in the title match, but I think I know what's going to happen now. The main event, though, on night one is for the NXT Women's Championship. The women are headlining night one. Io Shirai defends against Raquel Gonzalez. I like the way they've been building this matchup now for weeks. On Friday, Raquel was just kicking Io's ass. She put her through a wall. Io was the one who was left standing tall when the show was over. Io Shirai has been the women's champion now for many months. Many, many months. And I've been waiting for this match for a while. It was Gonzalez who pinned her, who pinned the champion to win the War Games match for her team back in, I guess it would have been November. They never really followed up on it. This would have been the natural follow-up. It feels like the right time. It feels like Io has done all she can do with this, at least this current reign. I'm not saying move her up or anything, but I feel like it's time to change the title. And Raquel Gonzalez, you know, she's no longer the tag team champion with Dakota Kai. Now is the right time. So I think we're going to have a new champion. I think that new champion will be Raquel Gonzalez. And that leads into night two on Thursday. Santos Escobar one-on-one with Jordan Devlin in a ladder match to unify the two cruiserweight titles. We're going to have one unified, undisputed NXT cruiserweight champion. I believe it will be Jordan Devlin. And that will then allow Santos Escobar to move on beyond the cruiserweight division because he could be doing much bigger things than that. That will allow him to move on. And Devlin will be the singular cruiserweight champion. We also have Johnny Gargano defending his North American title against the winner of the Gauntlet Eliminator, which I said I think it'll be Bronson Reed. I think Bronson Reed wins the title. I think Bronson Reed is going to become the new North American champion, and I believe he will then drop the belt, maybe not right away. But I think this is all building to an eventual match with LA Knight. And I think Knight is going to be the one to take that title away eventually from Bronson Reed. Reed was Knight's first big opponent since he debuted a few weeks ago. Bronson Reed has a pinfall win, in fact, a couple of weeks ago on TV over LA Knight. LA Knight's already lost. He lost to Bronson Reed. So I see Reed winning the title. And again, how quickly they want to come back to Reed and Knight, I don't know. Maybe he's a quick transitional champion. But that's how I see the progression of things going here from Gargano to Reed, from Reed to Knight. Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell against Ember Moon and Shotzi Blackheart for the NXT Women's Tag Team titles. They just won the belts. I don't see a need to take them off them so soon. I think Ember Moon and Shotzi pick up the win and retain. We have Adam Cole against Kyle O'Reilly in an unsanctioned match. Seems pretty obvious to me that Roderick Strong may be involved in some way. We saw Roddy on TV Wednesday. He lost to Cameron Grimes and then sulked his way out of the building, ended up not even being in the Eliminator match. Wouldn't be surprised if he reappeared at TakeOver and got involved in some way. But they have been promoting this match as a very personal affair between these two. This has been building now for quite some time. I thought the Prime Target video they aired on Wednesday was fantastic. They always do a great job. Yeah, they did a Prime Target video for Rhea Ripley and Raquel Gonzalez the last time they fought. That is one of the best videos I think this company has ever done. They do tremendous work on those video pieces. Got me hyped up for this match. I think Kyle O'Reilly needs this a lot more than Adam Cole does. Kyle O'Reilly lost twice to Finn Balor. He couldn't win the big one. He could not win the NXT Championship. This is the next biggest match of his career. And I think it needs to be a Kyle O'Reilly win. I think it will be. And then Finn Balor defends the NXT Championship against the former champion Karrion Kross, who never actually lost his title. He got hurt. He was stripped. Now he's back. And I think the time is upon us for an NXT title. It's been a hell of a run for Finn Balor. He's had some great matches as the champion. But I think this is Karrion Kross's time, picking him to regain the NXT championship. And there you go. That's my takeover rundown, and I will see you all Thursday night. We'll talk about both nights live on YouTube. Join me then. We got some more shouts here. Got a shout out some of the biggest fans of the podcast who support each and every week. The Diamond Dallas Dance Machine, Harrison Soep, Ostentatious Alan Carter, Mean Matt Forbush, New York Punk Arnold Modesto, the Wichita Workhorse Clayton Nettleton, Sherrod Big Daddy Boyd, Better Than Raw, Robert Michalshek, Renato Realman Lucifora. We've also got Belt Fan Brent Banner says, why is the running theme of the How Did We Even Get Here podcast this week? Brent and Trey talk about why WWE booking is terrible, why the camera should be turned on before filming your podcast episode. That is always helpful. And the importance of finding and following your own personal why in life. All that plus the FU of the week, good vibes only. Just search for How Did We Even Get Here everywhere you find your favorite podcast and on YouTube at tinyurl.com/gethere tube. We'll have some more here in just a little bit, but we got to keep the ball rolling because we had a lot of news to get into this week. And that includes Andrade. Andrade did some interviews this week with former WWE announcer Hugo Savinovich for Lucha Libre Online and the Mas Lucha podcast, talking about a lot of different subjects, including why Charlotte Flair was originally removed from the WrestleMania card. This is unbelievable. He said Charlotte was pulled from WrestleMania, not because of COVID. That came later. She was pulled from WrestleMania after being told by a WWE doctor that she was pregnant. That turned out not to be true. This happened before she tested positive for COVID, which I believe she is now cleared from. He too, by the way, Andrade also had COVID. I don't know if she got it from him or he got it from her, but he had COVID a few weeks ago. He's over it now. Alex McCarthy of TalkSport shared this statement that he received from Charlotte's people. What Manny said about the pregnancy test in today's interview is true, but a significant amount of context is lost in translation, and we would like to clear that up as best we can. A few weeks ago, Charlotte received a call from WWE Medical telling her that her HCG levels had come back high and she was medically suspended for pregnancy. That day, she took several home tests that all came back negative. A few days later, blood work and ultrasound confirmed she was not pregnant. This was before Flair had any issues with COVID. She is medically cleared. This put a lot of context for her, mainly how small a woman's career window is. The men are able to work well into their 50s, while the women are seen as older, in their early 30s even. For an athlete in her prime, these years mean everything. Her issue is with the process and how the information was relayed as opposed to the information itself. Yeah, I would say that I would have an issue with that, too. If I got a phone call telling me that I was... if I got a phone call telling me that I was pregnant, then we got a real problem. But if I were in her shoes, and I got a phone call telling me that you're medically suspended because you're pregnant, have a nice day, click. Yeah, that wouldn't sit well with me either. So now we're heading into the biggest show of the year, two nights of WrestleMania, the first time they're going to be back performing in front of live people, flesh and blood human beings. And unless they work something out on television at the 11th hour this week, it looks like Charlotte Flair will not be on the card, and she's totally healthy and ready to go. Now, they could shoehorn her into the Raw Women's title match this week. In fact, I could absolutely see that happening. But as of this moment, she is not on the WrestleMania card, and it is through no fault of her own. It was because of a screw-up. This is unbelievable to me. You know, I really think Andrade fucked up big time here. I could appreciate him doing these interviews and being open and honest and talking about why he left WWE and things that were going on in the company and just being very, very honest. I get the sense, though, from the way this all played out and the fact that Charlotte felt the need to put a statement out to explain things and everything. Yeah, you're talking about a pregnancy. Now, she turned out not to be pregnant. And I don't know the science behind what happened here. Who knows? I mean, again, WWE detected certain high levels of things. Who knows whether or not, you know, she was or wasn't pregnant. Now she's not. She took a test and said she's not pregnant, so she's not pregnant. But that's a very personal thing. And I don't get the sense that it's something that she had necessarily wanted him to share or that he told her that he was going to share. He just sort of almost like blurted it out. Like he didn't want to really talk about stuff that was too personal at first, but then he ended up talking about it. And that's messed up. Yeah, because she shouldn't have that stuff put out there if she doesn't want it to be. And then she had to go do damage control and try to, well, here's what he really meant. Yeah, here's what really happened with this whole pregnancy situation. If that's not something that she wanted him to share, then he had no business sharing that. And it sounds like she didn't want him putting that out there. And you can understand why. That's a deeply personal thing. If I were her, I would be pissed. So I think he probably needs to be a lot more careful in the future when it comes to him talking about stuff like that, especially stuff that, yeah, okay, they're together, but that's her health. You know, that's her personal situation. If she didn't want that out there, then he fucked up by putting it out there. And that's just my sense from her having to put that statement out the way it was worded. She might want to have a chat with him about that. So Andrade talked about a few other things. Said he got LASIK surgery on his eyes back in October. But here's another great example that just makes me shake my head sometimes when I hear these stories and I think, what is going on in this company? So he has LASIK surgery in October. He's cleared to return by doctors in November. Vince McMahon and Triple H apparently didn't even know he was cleared until he told them just recently. That's how they found out that Andrade was cleared. He was talking to Triple H recently, and Triple H had no idea. Meanwhile, for months, he's sitting around catering with nothing to do, waiting to be used. How does that even happen? Don't they have a system for this in place? Don't they have any kind of organization within? So, another reason I'm sure that Andrade was not very happy. He said they told Angel Garza, who he was teaming up with for a while, they told Angel Garza to cut his hair because they were going to use him, they were going to push him in some way. So he goes and cuts his hair, and they ended up not using him. Now, as for himself, he was told, he didn't say by who, but he was told that he wasn't being used because his English wasn't very good, which is exactly what I said. I said, his English is not very good. Maybe conversationally, like if you were to do an interview with him or talk to him, you know, maybe he speaks English well enough. But when it came to promos on TV, he wasn't very good. But that's why you keep Zelina Vega with him. Or if not Zelina Vega, then somebody else. You give him a mouthpiece. You give him somebody who can do the talking for him. That's why that pairing worked so well in NXT, and it worked well when he first came up to the main roster. There was no reason to break them up. And I'm going to get into another example of a pairing that was broken up this week for no good fucking reason. This is an epidemic problem in this company. But he says he was told it's because your English is not very good. But he made a great point. Andrade made a fantastic point, a fantastic counterpoint to that. He said, well, if that's the case, how do you explain all of the wrestlers who do speak perfect, fluent English who don't get pushed and just sit around in catering? What do you think? It's just the Spanish-speaking people who are in the back with nothing to do? You think it's just Andrade and Humberto who are sitting around in the back with nothing to do? You've got Murphy. You've got a ton of people who speak English just fine, or they're native English speakers who aren't getting a push either, who are sitting around with their thumb up their ass with nothing to do. When he met with Triple H said, look, you can come back to NXT for a year, and then at that point, make your way back to Raw or SmackDown with a new contract. Because you see, it's all about trying to get these guys to sign that new contract. That's all it is. We want to get these guys locked in for 3 years, 5 years. That way they can't go anywhere. We have them. We own them. That's all it's ever about, getting that new contract signed. He said he had no interest in going backwards. He felt that he can make good money outside of WWE, which I don't doubt he can. Absolutely. That's why it's always a great thing to have options out there. He talked about the wrestlers being effectively held hostage in Saudi Arabia. This was back in, I guess it would have been November it was, I think, or end of October 2019. Halloween. Might have been a Halloween show. That was that Crown Jewel show in Saudi Arabia. He said he was one of the guys who refused to ever go back, even though I think he did end up going back. He said his mother was on her deathbed during that trip, and because it took so much longer for him to get home, she ended up dying before he had a chance to say goodbye. He said the company knew about the situation with his mom, and even when they chartered that private plane to take a handful of talent back to try to get them to SmackDown on time, he was not included on that plane. If he had been, perhaps he would have been able to make it home in time to see his mom one last time. But whoever he signs with in this country, he says he knows he would have to be exclusive, but he's also very interested in returning to New Japan. He's very interested in working in Mexico. He would love to wrestle Kenny Omega, he says, so I guess that means AEW is a possibility. Ring of Honor, he says, is a possibility. Whatever promotion signs him, if they're looking for big in-ring matches, he's going to be a major asset for them. Because the man can work. Now, maybe not on promos. That might need work. But in the ring, he can work. And that's what a lot of these companies prioritize. So when he says that he wanted to take his chances outside of WWE, he thinks he can make good money, I guarantee you, he can make very good money. And he can work different places, which is clearly what he wants to do and what is going to make him happy. WWE made the Rob Van Dam news official this week about him being inducted into the Hall of Fame, which has already been taped and will air on Peacock this Tuesday. They also announced Titus O'Neil is this year's recipient of the Warrior Award. I know a lot of people, myself included, thought that Shad Gaspard would be honored or should be honored for his heroism in saving his son's life by sacrificing his own. But according to a report from Fightful, Titus was originally going to receive the award in 2020, before the pandemic ruined everything, and it was important to them that they do it in Tampa because he lives in Tampa. He's been very charitable in the community, you know, down there in Tampa for years. So maybe next year. Maybe next year for Shad. Honestly, you know what they should do? They should rename the award the Shad Gaspard Award. Since the Warrior Award was never really about what Warrior wanted it to be anyway. The way he described the award during his Hall of Fame speech is not what this award is. It's a very nice award. It's a very nice honor. But there really is no reason for Warrior to have his name attached to it. So I'd be in favor of renaming it. In favor of Shad. And this year's celebrity inductee, or at least one of them, will be 90-year-old William Shatner. Captain Kirk being beamed up into the Hall of Fame. This guy must have found the fountain of fucking youth, because when I found out he was 85 years old a few years ago, I couldn't believe it. I thought it had to be a mistake. And even now, here we are 5 years later, the guy is 90. The man looks 60. I'm not joking. Find any recent interview with him and you tell me that looks like a 90-year-old man. I should look that good when I'm in my 60s, let alone my 90s, if I make it that far. But he once gave Jerry Lawler a monkey flip on the King's Court on an episode of Raw back in 1995. He was chosen to induct Lawler into the Hall of Fame, even though Lawler wanted Lance Russell to do the induction for him, because without Lance Russell, there probably would never have been a Jerry Lawler in the wrestling business. And this was at a time when Lance Russell was still alive and able-bodied. And he really wanted him to do his induction. I think this would have been back in 2007, I think it was, when Lawler went in. And it was Kevin Dunn who told Jerry Lawler, well, King, nobody knows who Lance Russell is. So they picked William Shatner instead to do the induction. All I remember about that is Shatner was sweating bullets. He was sweating bullets. And I think getting booed during his speech inducting Lawler. But then he guest hosted an episode of Raw. This was about probably about a decade ago now when they were doing the guest host stuff. And he had that one skit. It was like a segment that they recorded where he was singing various WWE wrestler entrance themes. He sang Shawn Michaels' song, John Cena's song, Triple H's song. That was great. That actually was quite great. And I'm sure they will, I hope they play that during his Hall of Fame induction video. The Bella Twins were part of the 2020 class who were going in this year. And again, this has all been taped already. So they were inducted this year too. They didn't sound very happy about having their time cut for their speeches based on what they said on their podcast. This is what Bree said. We had a speech written, but then we realized it was too long because we're only allowed to do our speech for 3 to 5 minutes. We wrote a 15-minute speech because usually they're like 10 to 15 minutes. Then we found out they were like, no, it has to be 3 to 5 minutes. To do your Hall of Fame speech and take out that much stuff is really hard. We were wondering, like, how do we condense this? What's important? We want to thank all these people and tell stories. Nikki Bella said, we have always been grateful women. And that's where it's difficult. The majority of our speech is thanking people, and they're like, talk more about yourself. We've already proven ourselves as Hall of Famers. It's almost like winning an Oscar. You're thanking the people who helped get you there. You know who you have to thank for this, don't you? Mr. T, who might still be giving a speech about his mother, had Kane not walked out and given him the hook. So you can thank him for that. Now let's get into this Monday Night Raw stuff, because with less than 2 weeks until WrestleMania, at a time when you would think things would be peaking on these shows, WWE delivered the most abysmal episode of Monday Night Raw all year. If I didn't know any better, I would think Vince McMahon is intentionally trying to sabotage these shows just to make a point that nothing matters because they already have their money. They have their $1 billion. They don't even have to try. See? Look how easy it is. I cannot imagine anyone who works for that company watching this show and thinking it was any good and actually being proud of it. Being proud of what they are putting out there. I cannot conceive of such a thing. They broke up the Hurt Business, which has been one of the few success stories on this show over the past year, one of the highlights of the pandemic era. In these last few weeks, Shelton Benjamin and Cedric Alexander have lost the Raw Tag Team titles, they've lost a 2-on-1 handicap match, and now they have been kicked to the curb, and Shelton lost a match on this show to Bobby Lashley. Now, we cannot 100% dismiss the possibility, however small it may be, that this is all part of an elaborate swerve on Drew McIntyre. But it sure doesn't sound that way. First of all, the stipulation is that the Hurt Business are not allowed at ringside. Now, I don't know how you get around that. If they broke up the Hurt Business, so technically Shelton and Cedric are no longer part of the Hurt Business, and maybe that's their way around the stipulation, but it just feels like I'm reaching now. It sure doesn't sound like any kind of an elaborate swerve based on this report from Fightful that said even the talent involved was blindsided by the decision and they were not happy about it. Vince McMahon is the one who personally made the call. This was not a creative decision from anybody else other than Vince McMahon. This is despite Lashley and MVP being very vocally against the idea in a meeting with Vince McMahon himself. They made it very clear they were not happy about this. They did not agree with this. They did not want this. And Vince is said to have dug in his heels even more. He was even more opposed to the idea of abandoning the breakup. And he dug his heels in so much that there was no changing his mind. He insisted, this is what we're doing. Period. End of story. Now, if you're Shelton Benjamin and Cedric Alexander, because I think Lashley will always, you know, he'll have a certain status on the show. Although it's feeling to me very much like this is all just building to Lashley having the belt taken away from him and just giving Drew his big crowning moment at Raymond James Stadium. That's what this is feeling more and more like to me. I mean, I'll do my predictions on Friday, but unless they do something on the show that changes my mind this week, that's certainly the way it feels right now. That's what we're headed for. But if you're Shelton and Cedric, you are the ultimate losers in this scenario because you know that the two of these guys, both these guys, they're doomed. These guys are doomed, especially Shelton. Remember what they were doing with Shelton before the Hurt Business? Nothing. Fucking nothing. That's what they were doing with Shelton Benjamin. The biggest idea they came up with for Shelton Benjamin a couple of years ago was that stupid shit that lasted all of 3 weeks on TV where they would cut to him in the back for a promo, he wouldn't say anything, and his eyes would dart around like he just drank 6 cups of coffee. And then that went nowhere. That was the start of a comedy gimmick that went nowhere. So if the Hurt Business is really broken up, these guys are done. I mean, Cedric could always go back to doing 205 Live and the stuff he was doing before, but these two guys are dead in the water. And they know it. You know that they know it. MVP and Lashley know it. That's why they were probably arguing hard against the idea. Vince McMahon doesn't care. Because Vince McMahon was never interested in pushing Shelton Benjamin and Cedric Alexander. It was all about trying to build up Bobby Lashley. And it's great. And Lashley now is getting the biggest push of his life. And he has embraced the role. He looks the part. I think he should get a longer run with the championship. He and MVP as a combo are perfect together. I don't want to say it's Lesnar-Heyman, but it's got that kind of vibe to it. Cedric and Shelton, they were just kind of background players to help build up Lashley and get him to this point. They were never a priority. And now Vince McMahon sees Lashley. He's finally attained that status that they always knew he could achieve. He's the champion. Now we don't have a need for these two guys anymore. So they fade back into obscurity where they were before. Back to catering you go. And it's another example of WWE breaking up a team for no good reason. How'd that work out for the Iconics? I wasn't even a big Iconics fan. And I realize how stupid a move that was. How'd that work out for them? How'd that work out for Billy and Peyton? How'd that work out for Otis and Tucker? Or at least Tucker. Otis just traded one partner for another, but at least Otis is on television. If they had something better for these people to do, then that would be one thing. But they don't. They just break them up for the sake of breaking them up. There was no reason to do this, other than the obvious, and I said this on Twitter on Tuesday. The day after this happened, I said, I was replying to somebody on Twitter, and they were like, why would they do this? Why would they break up the Hurt Business? And it was pretty obvious why they did this. They really want to make sure that Bobby Lashley does not get cheered at WrestleMania, and that Drew McIntyre doesn't get booed. This is why they did what they did at the end of the show with Baron Corbin. Baron fucking Corbin! Attacked Drew McIntyre after Lashley had put that bounty on his head the week before. SmackDown's own Baron Von Dipshit was there to answer the call. Not to be confused with Alberto Del Dipshit. No relation. McIntyre, Lashley, and Corbin were at one time a faction. I don't know if they ever had a proper name. It didn't last that long. It was for a few weeks or a couple of months, whatever it was. But they were a trio on TV, on Raw. So there is history there with these three. But as awful as Raw is, think about how awful the show is from one week to the next. It is atrocious. It is the worst show on television, wrestling-wise. I don't know that anybody in the world was thinking, you know what this show needs? You know what would make this show more interesting and more tolerable? Baron Corbin. Maybe if you were a dementia patient who was signed up for a new drug trial and they gave you the placebo. Then I would expect an answer like that. Then I can understand that. But not from any completely healthy person of sound body and mind. Why would they do this? For the same reason that they're worried that Lashley might get cheered at WrestleMania and McIntyre might get booed. So what better way to guarantee booze than to stick Baron Corbin with Bobby Lashley? That's why they did it. And Corbin will wrestle McIntyre on Raw tomorrow night, in a match I'm sure that all of you are just waiting on. You've set your clock app on your phone. The countdown clock is set. You are counting down the hours, I'm sure, until Corbin and McIntyre. So they break up the Hurt Business. They put Baron Corbin on the show, which is enough for an F score right there. We could just end it right there. But we weren't done yet. So we had Sheamus and Matt Riddle. They had their usual good outing. They had a match on the show, non-title. They're going to have a very good match at WrestleMania. They're going to wrestle for the United States Championship. They have great chemistry in the ring. They work well together. Big stage like WrestleMania. I saw the pictures online. Sheamus is bringing back his mohawk for the big show. So I'm sure at WrestleMania they're going to have a fine match. Maybe even a title change. They've not only added train noises to Braun Strowman's matches now, but they have added animated birds to Matt Riddle's entrance when he kicks off his flip-flops. I'm sure it has to do with the weed or something. There's some kind of joke in there, because otherwise I have no fucking idea why birds would be flying out of his fucking shoes. But there was a backstage segment on this show where Riddle was in the back doing his stoner comedy shtick with Asuka. He was talking about his scooter that he's been riding around now for weeks in the back. All of a sudden, he seemed to just break character. He starts laughing. He says he forgot what he was supposed to say. And he laughed and he walked off. And you can hear him mumble like, oh, that's not good. Or this isn't good. Or something like that. Asuka just stood there. She didn't know how to react. So she just kind of nervously laughed it off. Vince McMahon and Bruce Pritchard were said to be in stitches in the back laughing their asses off. And they decided to keep it in the show because they thought it was funny. I prefer to believe that Riddle just suddenly realized that this shit they're writing for me is garbage. And he just gave up and walked away. I know that's not what happened, but I would like to, in a perfect world, think that he just realized, what is this crap? And in the middle of this live take, he just decided to walk away. I'd have more respect for him if he did that. Shane McMahon. You know nothing good is going to follow when I say those two words, because you know that it involves his storyline with Braun Strowman. This week, Shane McMahon somehow gained possession of Braun Strowman's fifth grade report card, showing that he got a D- in social studies, he got a D- in math, he got a D in English, and he got a D+ in gym class. Maybe I should do my own report card on WWE Creative. Maybe one week I'll do my own WWE Creative report card here on the show. Only they would have been expelled from school a long time ago. Strowman came out. He beat Jackson Ryker. Short match. They did the train noise again as he circled the ring for his running shoulder tackle. When this was over, Braun took the mic. He was completely out of breath after this 2 minute and 20 second marathon match. Maybe he was doing his best Shane McMahon impersonation. And he said that their match at WrestleMania, because he gets to pick the stipulation, their match at WrestleMania will now be a steel cage match. Yes, because nobody has ever interfered in a steel cage match before. And there's obviously no way for Shane to escape. I mean, it's not like the top of the cage is open or anything. Shane obviously needs something high to jump off of. So we're getting a cage match. I guess the pirate ship, I suppose, is too far from the ring. Or maybe the stadium said it was too much of a liability. The best part of this was MVP was on commentary. Samoa Joe was not on the show for some reason, so MVP was here on commentary. And after the stipulation was announced, he just goes, I'll bet Shane isn't smiling anymore. This was after Braun picked the stipulation. The camera then almost timed just perfectly. Immediately cuts to Shane McMahon, and what is Shane McMahon doing? He's smiling. Can't make this shit up. Oh my god, we had Miz and Morrison introducing their new music video, Hey Hey, Hop Hop, hopping around in bunny costumes. That brought out Damian Priest and Bad Bunny. Bad Bunny said that he would make Miz his bitch. which brought Miz out to the floor where he was, and Bad Bunny threw a stiff shot to the jaw. Look, I'll give him props for the punch. It looked good. He's been training for this, clearly. Triple H said that Bad Bunny, I think, moved himself either to Orlando or closer to Orlando. He's been coming to the Performance Center for about 3 or 4 months training. So to Bad Bunny's credit, he is taking this seriously. And I think at WrestleMania, he'll probably... I don't think he's going to go in there and embarrass himself at WrestleMania. He threw a good... good worked punch. Maybe it wasn't so worked. But it looked good. Then we had game night with the New Day. So we had game night, we had Braun's fifth grade report card, we had men dancing around in bunny costumes, and the United States champion riding around on his scooter with birds, animated 3D birds flying out of his flip-flops. If you think this is a quality build to WrestleMania, you need to get your head examined. New Day was in the ring. They had AJ Styles in the ring with them and Omos. They played charades. They played Pictionary. Somewhere in here, not New Day, but WWE shared a video. I had seen this on social media. I think Hogan retweeted it. But they shared a video from social media of a young child doing this amazingly accurate Hulk Hogan impersonation. He was basically cutting a Hulk Hogan promo. But as far as Hogan impersonations are concerned, this one was dead on. Thankfully, he only impersonated a Hogan promo and not, never mind. There was a contract signing between Asuka and Rhea Ripley that led to Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler coming out and Rhea accepting their challenge to a match tomorrow night. So for the third time in the span of a few weeks, they are once again doing the opponents as tag team partners angle. We just saw this with Sasha Banks and Bianca Belair twice. We just saw this with Finn Balor and Karrion Kross on NXT. And now we're seeing it again on Raw with Rhea Ripley. They're hitting every show. We go from SmackDown to NXT to Raw. The same fucking angle on all three shows. Why even include the word creative in the creative team? Why do we do that? Why do we even call it creative? What is so creative about it? There's absolutely nothing creative about what they do. I think it's time we stop using that word. Drew McIntyre. He busted into the men's locker room. He was clearly gotten to by this bounty that Lashley put on his head. He was basically begging someone. He was begging anyone in this locker room, come take a shot at me. Come fight me. And nobody would. They all looked like timid little children. Lashley had promised a title match to anyone who takes out Drew before WrestleMania. They could take Drew's spot in the WrestleMania main event. And none of them seemed interested in taking him up on the offer. One guy finally did lunge at Drew. I didn't get a good look at who it was. He kind of swatted him away. Braun Strowman was sitting in the middle of this giant open dressing room. Braun Strowman is sitting down in a chair. And Drew McIntyre is yelling at him and telling him to stand up. Why don't you take advantage? Why don't you go ahead and accept the challenge? And Strowman just said, look, he's got Shane McMahon on his mind. After WrestleMania, we can do this, but I got Shane McMahon on my mind. Matt Riddle is in the other corner, and he's like, bro. He goes, I'm stuffed, bro. Sheamus is like a Thanksgiving meal, bro. I don't have time for dessert, bro. They could not have made these people look any worse if they tried. We're talking about the WWE Championship. We're talking about a potential WrestleMania main event. Nobody seemed to care. Drew McIntyre, he finally walks over to Ricochet. Ricochet agrees to fight him. Ricochet. Now that's comedy. I have to say, WWE usually misses the mark with a lot of their comedy. They're very hit or miss. This was comedy. Of all the people in the locker room is Ricochet. Rick O'Shea is the one who stands up to Drew McIntyre and accepts his challenge. And Drew then beat Ricochet in a 3-minute match, after which he was then attacked by Mustafa Ali, which led to an impromptu second match with Drew against Ali, which also ended very quickly. Still no mention of Retribution since the breakup at Fastlane. It's like it never even happened. And they don't appear to be repackaging any of them, at least not yet, because T-Bar and Slapdick and Mace are all on the list of Andre Battle Royal participants this year. And we had Drew McIntyre confronting Lashley in the show closing angle. Baron Corbin attacks Drew McIntyre. Dreadful. A dreadful, dreadful show. You know, McIntyre has talked about wanting to be the first match in front of the live audience at WrestleMania. Talked about that this past week. The opening match spot on that night one show this year is probably going to be the most coveted spot on all of WrestleMania. Because that's going to be the very first match, WWE match, in front of actual fans in 13 months. We're just shy of 13 months. It would be a great reason to open the show with a WWE title match and close the show with the Royal Rumble winner for the women, Bianca Belair, challenging Sasha Banks for the SmackDown Women's Championship. The stage is set. Drew said it himself. He wants to open the show. I say give him what he wants and let the women go on last. Let the Royal Rumble winner challenge for the championship in the true main event of night one, which is the way it should be. Some final shout-outs here. Our buddy Adam from FWCI ETC on YouTube checks out the new Space Jam trailer this week. Also, the first episode of the new cartoon series Invincible on Prime Video and his first monthly Aussie Dashcam Owners compilation. He's got actual Dashcam video on his channel this week that you should check out. Also, this week's episode of World Wrestling Strea with three Aussie stars potentially winning titles at WrestleMania. Visit youtube.com/FWCIETC or follow at FWCIETC on Twitter. And a shout out to Omega Man, Joseph Clothier, who has a YouTube channel called Silent Shredder, where he is posting WWE fantasy booking videos, including one that he just did on WrestleMania 37. He's also planning on a new series where he watches episodes of Lucha Underground for the first time and reviews each one of them. Search for Silent Shredder on YouTube. That's with two R's at the end. You can also find him on Twitch at twitch.tv/Silent Shredder. We move over to SmackDown on Friday night, which I believe was their last live show from Tropicana Field. The Thunderdome is moving to the same building where the Royal Rumble was held back in 1995, the Sun Dome in Tampa. I don't think it's called that anymore. It's got a different name now. But it is on the University of South Florida campus. They continue to build nicely to the triple threat match of WrestleMania, which is the undisputed main event of WrestleMania this year. The best promoted match may end up being the best match. This is the true main event without question at WrestleMania this year. Edge cut a good promo to start the show. He was kind of morphing back into his rated R superstar persona and delivering his justification for doing so. You know, and the best heels, because he is more of a heel than a babyface. He's kind of in the middle right now, but I'd say certainly more heel than babyface. The best heels are the ones who justify their actions, and they don't see themselves as being the bad guy. Daniel Bryan got his chance to shine this week in the main event. He beat up Jey Uso, and he left both Roman Reigns and Edge laying to end the show. Any of these three men could conceivably walk out of WrestleMania with the title. You can make an argument for any of those three. It is one of the matches on the show that has probably the most unpredictable finish. I could see Roman retaining when, you know, Edge and Bryan sort of take each other out. I could see Edge getting it. I could see Bryan getting it. That's the benefits of doing a triple threat. Roman Reigns does not even have to take the loss. He doesn't have to be pinned. He doesn't have to tap out. There's any number of ways they can go with it. Sami Zayn had invited Logan Paul to be his guest of honor this week, and he premiered the trailer for his big conspiracy documentary, which included him, among other things, pondering the idea of a flat earth. I think AJ Styles would like to have a word with him. He wanted Jake Paul, or not Jake Paul, but Logan Paul's feedback when it was over, and he started to give him some constructive criticism. When all of a sudden Kevin Owens ran out, he gave Sammy a stunner, left him laying, and then on his way out of the ring, he brushed past Logan Paul. He kind of shoved him aside. Logan Paul did not seem to like that very much. I'm thinking Logan Paul is eating a stunner at WrestleMania, much to the delight of the crowd, one would think. Apollo Crews challenged Big E to a Nigerian drum fight at WrestleMania for the Intercontinental title, which he described as something his ancestors created for those who are wronged to be able to make things right. There are no rules, there are no limitations, just a beating so loud it sounds like a drum. That is how he described it. Otherwise, we really don't know the rules of this thing. It just sounds like a no disqualification match to me. I only hope they don't have people banging drums throughout the entire match, because I think that would get old very fast. This Friday, they are billing the show as a WrestleMania edition of SmackDown, which basically are the matches they didn't have time to include on either of the two nights of WrestleMania. Dolph Ziggler and Bobby Roode are going to defend their SmackDown Tag Team titles in a Fatal 4-Way against Otis and Chad Gable, the Street Profits, and Rey and Dominic Mysterio. And they have bumped the Andre Battle Royal to SmackDown, which was already taped on Thursday. Battle Royal includes Akira Tozawa, Angel Garza, Cedric Alexander, Drew Gulak, Humberto Carrillo, Jackson Ryker, Jey Uso, Kalisto, King Corbin, Lince Dorado, Mace, Murphy, Mustafa Ali, Rick O'Shea, Shelton Benjamin, Shinsuke Nakamura, Slapdick, T-Bar, and Tucker. It sucks for the guys who are hoping to perform in front of actual live fans. That's really the main thing I kind of feel bad about. They've only got six matches scheduled for each night of WrestleMania so far. I don't know why they wouldn't just add one of each to either night. I'm not complaining. I mean, the shorter the better when it comes to these WrestleMania shows. I've been asking for that for years, right? Shorten each night. That's one of the biggest benefits of splitting it up into two nights like this. But you got to think, you got a lot of really upset talent who are bummed to find out that they're on the WrestleMania card, but not really. And they're going to be performing in front of a Thunderdome audience, or they have already, because I think the show's already been taped. They will not be able to be in front of a live crowd in Mania, so that sucks for them. Now, I'm going to dive into some of your mailbag questions here, which I've been not able to get to for a few weeks, because there's been a lot going on. And what I'm doing is something a little bit different. This week in wrestling history is going to be a special bonus episode of The Sound Off, dropping on the feed a little bit later on today, probably sometime tonight, breaking it off as a Sound Off extra this week so I can get to some of your mailbag questions now. But really, the main reason, I had over 20 WrestleManias to talk about, which was quite the chore. This was a ridiculous week. Over 20 WrestleManias. Many of them very big shows, too. Some very significant WrestleManias, including the very first one, and arguably the greatest one of all time. That's not the first one, but one that came many years later. So what I decided to do, because it's going to be a long one, we'll save that as a bonus episode. You can download that separately. It should be up on the feed, if not by the time you listen to this, very shortly thereafter. So there is a history section this week. Don't be alarmed. We're just saving it for a bonus show. But right now, I want to get to your questions. You can always email me. TheSolemonster@gmail.com is the email address. You can please include your name and where you are from when you write in. That would be most helpful. And we're going to kick things off here with John from Douglastown, New Brunswick. Might have been the first question I've ever gotten from Douglastown. On his podcast, Arn Anderson recently talked about Bray Wyatt and why he was never seen as a top guy while he was there. While he was there in WWE. Saying that they beat him too often for him to be special. I've heard you talk about this before. Did you hear what he said? And do you agree? Absolutely. Of course I agree. I said this many times on the podcast back then. I wanted to go pull the quote from Arn so I could just read it to all of you. This is specifically what Arn Anderson said on his podcast. He said, this is in regards to Bray Wyatt. He was scarier to me in just the Bray Wyatt role than he is in the monster role. I know what he can give you as a character. The promos he did as the Bray Wyatt character to me was something we missed the boat on. You should not have beaten him 10 pay-per-views in a row. There's a thought. No matter how good you are, you as fans realize after 3 or 4 pay-per-views in a row, the guy's not a top guy. I thought he was, but apparently nobody else does, so I'm going to move on. That's kind of the mentality, and it's a normal reaction. If the company doesn't think you're a big deal, why should they? They being the fans. You know, there's a reason why I used to call him the eater of pins. And I would give example after example after example of these feuds that Bray Wyatt was in where he would cut these really good promos on John Cena or The Undertaker or Randy Orton, whoever it may be, right? And there are these really kind of spooky promos and how, you know, I'm going to end you or whatever the exact dialogue was. And I had one of the listeners of my show once, because I said, I wish somebody would splice all this together. And you guys are great, because I'll say that. And then within a few hours, somebody's gone ahead and done it. And he put a video together with clips from those Wyatt promos, immediately followed by clips of him being pinned. And there was that one year in the Royal Rumble, he was doing promos about how he's going to win the Royal Rumble and go on to WrestleMania. And then the next scene in the video, you see him just being very casually dumped out over the top rope. What happens is when you cut these types of promos and you never deliver, people just, you know, they don't take you seriously anymore. You turn into a joke. It's empty words. It's empty verbiage. It doesn't mean anything anymore. It's exactly what Arn Anderson is talking about. And Arn Anderson may well have been the agent for some of his matches. Arn Anderson was there. He was in the trenches. He was in the back. He was working for the company. He was watching this unfold in real time. So you're hearing somebody from within saying the exact same things that I was saying on the podcast at that time. I say the things that people in that company don't have the comfort and safety of saying because they're there. I'm not. So I can talk about these things and other people can talk about these things. And then eventually the truth comes out and the people who work there end up saying the exact same thing. Why would they beat this guy 10 pay-per-views in a row? Makes no sense. Look at a guy like Ryback. Now Ryback has said a lot of dumb shit, but at one time Ryback was over. He was legitimately over. I can remember a time where Ryback gave CM Punk a clothesline on TV. It actually might have been the end of the CM Punk Vince McMahon match when they had that match on Raw that one time. I think Ryback came out. I don't know where you would find, maybe there's a clip on YouTube of it. You can't bring it up on the network, I don't think, right now. But go back if you can and find that and watch when Ryback clotheslines, you know, the meat hook clothesline to CM Punk. The camera, the hard camera in the building is shaking. That's how loud the people are. And Ryback up to that point was still undefeated. I think this was right before he suffered that first loss to Punk in the Hell in a Cell match when John Cena was out with the elbow injury. But Ryback, who was unbeaten and he was over, he lost. And then what happened after that is he lost again and he lost again. And he went on this streak where I don't think he could buy a win on pay-per-view. He lost something like 5 or 6 pay-per-views in a row. And then came WrestleMania, and then they turned him heel the next night. They put him in a program for the championship with John Cena. But that was the end of Ryback. Ryback was never the same again, and maybe he would have burned out anyway. But that's another example of you have something that's working. Well, let's just take the guy and beat him in 6 straight pay-per-view matches. What do you think is going to happen when you do something like that? That's why I believe that there's just certain people in this company who don't want to see some of these guys get over. Maybe Ryback had enemies in the company. People didn't like him. They didn't think he would last. That's the only thing I can think of here, because this is just common sense. But we've seen this happen time and time and time again, and Bray Wyatt is another great example of it. And here's Arn Anderson just articulating exactly what I was saying for years. the eater of pins. It became a running joke. It took Bray Wyatt to reinvent himself and put a fucking mask on his face to try to get away from that and make people forget about it. Jake from State Farm. No. Jake from Kentucky. I kid. Jake from Kentucky. Remember when John Cena was rapping on The Rock and mentioned that The Rock had his lines written on his wrist and even joked about it, saying, hey, nice tattoo? Why did Rock have notes on his arm? He is a professional actor, and I never remember him writing down things on his body before. Was this done simply for Cena to make fun of him during the promo? Just keep in mind, just because you don't remember seeing it doesn't mean that he never did it. Right? They just never drew any attention to it, or Rock did a good job of hiding it. There's actually a lot of people who will scribble crib notes on their hand, on their wrist, like a little cheat sheet in case they forget. You know, if you're going to do a promo for 10 minutes by yourself in the ring and you've got to hit on 4 or 5 different points, you know, sometimes you want to just list them out, maybe on your hand, so in case you forget, you just kind of glance down. Oh, okay, there it is. Like, I don't see anything egregiously wrong with that. A lot of people have done that over the years. Rock is not the only one. In this case, if I remember correctly, I believe that was intentionally done exactly for what you said. I think you're dead on correct. That was done on purpose to give John Cena something to burn The Rock on when he came out and cut his promo. So I think that was all done intentionally. Kyle from St. Petersburg, Florida. What was the heat between Kevin Nash and Eddie Guerrero? Did Nash really call Eddie a vanilla midget? Yes. Vanilla midget is a term that Nash used for guys like Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit. And years later, Nash said that when Eddie and Chris hugged at the end of WrestleMania 20, that was the end of the wrestling business. He said that was the day that the wrestling business died. And I went to go pull the exact quote. It was from a Grantland interview that Nash did long time ago. This is probably going back 9 or 10 years now. But this was the quote from Nash in the interview. He said, when Benoit and Guerrero hugged, that was the end of the business. Has business been the same since that WrestleMania? Has it come close to the Austin era? Has it come close to the NWO or the Hogan era? You put two fucking guys that were great workers that were the same height as the fucking referees. And I'm sorry, man, are you going to watch a porno movie with a guy with a 3-inch dick? Even if you're not gay, you will not watch a porno movie with a guy with a 3-inch dick. That is not the standard in porno films. So you put a 5'7" guy as your world champion. I think part of it is that Nash wasn't very happy about things that Eddie Guerrero said about him in his book. Eddie hated Kevin Nash. Hated him. He felt that he held back a lot of guys, including himself, in WCW. Eddie, in his book, did not bury very many people. He tried to take the high road. He was a very devout person. Kevin Nash is one of the only people who Eddie Guerrero buried in his book. But this is what he said. This is the quote from Eddie Guerrero's book. Considering how little talent he had in the ring, Nash is one of the most arrogant people I have ever had the displeasure to know. He would walk right past you and not acknowledge your presence unless he thought there was something he could get out of you. I don't say this lightly, but I genuinely feel that Nash is evil. Wow. So that tells you right there what Eddie Guerrero's thoughts were of Kevin Nash. I'm sure that must have played a role in Nash's later opinions and some of the things he said about Eddie. I'm sure that didn't sit well with him. I mean, the guy called him evil, for crying out loud. I don't know that I would call him evil. Certainly Kevin Nash did a good job of looking out for himself and looking out for his buddies and made a lot of money in the wrestling business, doing things the way that he did them. And there's certainly a lot of philosophical differences between Eddie Guerrero and Kevin Nash. But yes, Nash did make those comments. I think he made them after both guys had already passed away even. Obviously, he did there in that interview. And Eddie Guerrero was not fond of Kevin Nash. So there was definitely heat there from both sides going back to their days in WCW. Jordan from Hatboro, Pennsylvania. Buy or sell on the better WrestleMania match, Hulk Hogan against Randy Savage at WrestleMania 5, or Hogan against Warrior at WrestleMania 6. Both are in the conversation for Hogan's best match ever, but I personally find it hard to pick which is better, as they're both good in their own ways. Two very different types of matches. So, this is all subjective anyway. We all know this. Buy or sell, I have to buy on Hogan Warrior and sell on Hogan Savage. Hogan Savage is one of the best matches, in-ring matches that Hogan ever had in his career. If you look at it from more of a match and like a technical perspective and not just the whole larger-than-life thing, if you really look at it from that way, there was no bigger Hogan match than the match with Andre at WrestleMania 3. After that, you probably have to say Hogan Rock from WrestleMania 18, but then right behind that, I would probably put Hogan Warrior WrestleMania 6. It was an epic match. If you were a young fan back then, you were either on Team Hogan or Team Warrior, but you had never seen a WrestleMania main event like that before between two of these ultimate babyfaces, let alone with both belts on the line, champion against champion, title for title. It was such a unique circumstance. And so to match them up that way in a big stadium, right, like Sky Dome, 67,000 people, Hogan, who had never really been beaten straight up before at WrestleMania, misses the leg drop, Warrior pins him. It was a huge moment. It was an epic match for that time. You give me the choice, I have to buy on Hogan Warrior. That match had a bigger impact on me than Hogan and Savage did. Yeah, but just kind of looking at it objectively, who had the better match between the two? A lot of people would probably say Hogan Savage. There's really no wrong answer there. My answer, I have to buy on Hogan Warrior and sell on Hogan and Savage. But they are both very good matches. Keep sending me your questions, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Not only will I potentially use them here on the main show, but we have a live sound-off inbox coming up on Sunday night, April 18th. That's 1 week after WrestleMania. Going to be going live on YouTube that night. We're going to be celebrating 700 episodes of the sound-off because episode 700 will drop earlier that day. So I may use some of your questions on the live YouTube stream. You never know. But thesolomonster@gmail.com is the place to send any and all inquiries, questions, comments. Follow me on Twitter @solomonster. Subscribe on YouTube. Boy, this is going to be a busy week. 5 straight nights of streaming live starting Wednesday night. We're going to be talking AEW. Thursday, we're going to be talking NXT. Friday, we're going to be talking SmackDown and WrestleMania predictions. Saturday is night 1 of WrestleMania. Sunday is night 2 of WrestleMania. In between all that is episode 699 of the podcast. Somewhere in there I might sleep. Maybe. I'll sleep when I'm dead. But thank you for all the support. You guys make this possible. You guys make this fun despite all the work that goes into it. And I appreciate you for it. And if you want to join and become a member on the Sound Off channel on YouTube, you may do so. We have 2 different tiers. Again, the higher tier is the one that has the retro audio. Otherwise, a lot of the perks are the same, but it's just another way for you to support. If you would like to do so, I sure would appreciate that. This week in wrestling history is a doozy this week, because I'm talking about over 20 years of WrestleMania history. It's basically a WrestleMania special edition. And I'm going to be working on that. It is not done. I'm going to be working on that as soon as I'm done here. And I get this show up. I will record this week in history, however long that goes. It's going to be a while. And I will get that up on the feed for all of you to download and stream later on tonight. And then, of course, the clips will end up on YouTube during the week as usual. So plenty of content for you to sink your teeth into. I hope you enjoy it all. Enjoy WrestleMania week. And I will see you for more Sound Off in just a few days. That's a lot of stuff. Until then, take care, guys.
The Solomonster Sounds Off.
That Shane McMahon segment with him and Braun Strowman from Monday night, this will go down among the all-time worst segments that I have ever seen. Absolutely nothing happened. Everything that is wrong with these 3-hour shows where they just blather on and they're clearly just stalling for time. If I am fortunate enough to live to a ripe old age in my final days recording Sound Off episode 2798, looking back on my life and how I spent my time, I'm going to remember this Shane McMahon segment and regret the fact that I wasted those minutes of my life that I would give anything to have back. This sucked.
The Solomonster Sounds Off, available wherever you hear podcasts, including iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and now Pandora.
Want more content?
Visit youtube.com/thesolomonster for Sound Off extras and more. And follow the Solomonster on Twitter at Solomonster.
Solomonster.
Put that cigarette out.
Solomonster Sounds Off.